From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
It looks like we are going to make the political revolution.
That was Vermont Senator and former Democratic Party presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders last Saturday, speaking at the so-called People's Summit in Chicago.
The American people are profoundly sick and tired of establishment politics and establishment economics.
But although there was an alternate economic vision offered at the summit, particularly with respect to health care, where advocates called for Medicare for all, foreign policy-wise, the silence was deafening. Sanders punctuated the point Wednesday when he joined 96 of his colleagues in voting to extend and add to sanctions against Russia, an amendment that passed 97-2 with one abstention. Both no votes came from Republicans, one from Senator Mike Lee of Utah and the other from Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. The one abstention was from Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland. For more on that and on the continued move to the right by Democrats of practically all persuasion, at least on foreign policy, we bring you BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly, whose Freedom Rider column this week is Under the Democrats' Bus.
That's what we always are. Yes. Good morning.
Watch out, Tom, for those tread marks.
Yes, I know, all over our bodies. We are seeing the response to Hillary Clinton's loss being pretty much what it's always been for Democrats. They may sometimes try to dress it up, but their ultimate goal is to move the party to the right and make the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, light. And we've seen, instead of having the serious discussion about how Trump won, about the fact that the Democrats had been on this losing streak for years now, we're being told that the way to win is to get Trump voters. That's the new mantra. And a lot of leading Democrats are saying, we can get Trump voters. We need to listen to them. Now, mind you, none of them bring up the fact that many portions of the Democratic Party constituency stayed home. And they never talk about how to get them back. How do you get black voters, the most loyal Democrats, to turn out election cycle after election cycle? They don't talk about how to get leftists. They're always punching down at the Green Party. They have to blame somebody for this debacle they created. But they never ask, well, how could we get Green Party voters, most of whom I'm sure have voted Democratic in the past? Some of them might be registered Democrats. How do we get them back? The conversation is all about getting the Trump voters and being told they're not that bad, they're not really racist. And I'm sure people voted for Trump for a variety of reasons. But I don't think trying to appeal to people who ultimately did choose to vote for a Republican, I don't think that is what the Democrats need to do to win.
As
but
this
is what they're choosing to do.
And you're saying that as opposed to people who have not voted at all or who are voting to the left of the Democrats with choices like the Greens. You're juxtaposing one against the other. Even inside the Trump voters, you know, the things that they're not going to go after are the Trump voters who voted for Trump because he promised to try to get better relations with Russia or an end to regime change or jobs. That stuff, I mean, jobs in a generic sense, you have Sanders saying, but, you know, the things that are not all on the hard right that attracted some Trump voters are not the things the Democrats are going to parse out of the policy mixture to try to draw Trump voters. And instead of course, offering some of those things to people who would have liked to have voted for somebody that wasn't Trump, saying those things, that didn't vote at all.
Exactly. And but this is where my other point is, this is where the Democratic Party has decided to be for several decades now. For a while, we heard endlessly about Reagan Democrats and how do we get these people who were putative Democrats but who supported Reagan, and they were this holy grail for Democrats. And they still use this term, you know, Reagan is dead. He hasn't been president for 30 some odd years now.
Right.
I think almost 40 years, in fact. But there's still this Reagan Democrat talk. So it's what they've been doing for a long time. And unfortunately, the other problem is that this strategy has been successful. Bill Clinton was a conservative Democrat. Obama was too. He marketed himself as a progressive, but he's basically a conservative guy as the Democrats go. And so it could work. And it always happens when there's a Republican victory, especially one like this, where there's an electoral college victory, not a popular vote victory. It gets even worse. Democrats are guilt-whipped into supporting the party, no matter how great its failings, no matter how little they do. Those who don't vote for the Democrat for whatever reason, voted green, didn't vote at all, are blamed for the failures of party leadership, and it's all their fault that no matter, and you know, especially if the Republicans are particularly bad, the shaming is even greater. So it's a little easier for them to get people in line and make Democratic voters willing to vote for anybody. So unfortunately, this could be successful, and we could end up with a Democrat in the White House who is even worse than the ones we've had already.
As if that's possible. I mean, let's go back to...
Well, it can always yes. I mean, when it comes to politics, things can always get worse.
You know, we'll go back to before Clinton, the last quote-unquote liberal Democrat that some people refer to him as. You have Carter, who had Zbigniew Brzezinski doing foreign policy, okay, who was about as hard right as they get. You know, we can keep going back. It's Lyndon Johnson that really dove into the Vietnam War, and it was Harry Truman that really kicked off the Cold War and the Korean War and a whole lot of things in between. So, you know, people like to imagine that there was this kumbaya moment led by John Kennedy speaking to, you know, to a university, I think American University or whatever, making a speech about wouldn't it be nice to try to have peace and our children's children and all that stuff. But, you know, there's a pretty sordid record of war making by Democrats, which, of course, is matched by that of Republicans.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And actually, the party that usually reaches out, the party of detente, has been Republicans. So in that sense, right. Trump is a typical Republican. So, yes, when it comes to war, you know, Lyndon Johnson, yes, we got Medicaid and Medicare. We also got Vietnam. So that's where the Democrats always always want to be. And well, that's where Hillary Clinton was. She, you know, I remember at the convention last year, it was a parade of generals and a parade of hardline hawks across the stage. It was very, at the same time, trying to claim their platform was very progressive, which nobody was fooled by. It's why she lost.
Right.
So they're still at it, and the loss to Trump will make them even worse. And I mean, let's look at the strategies they've been using since December. There was a congressional seat available in Montana. It's one of those states that its population is so small. There's only one House seat, and there were people actually advocating spending resources in Montana. Now, that is one of the reddest of the red states. That is an absolute waste. There is no use in Democrats spending money, time, resources, people power in Montana. But the fact that anybody would consider doing that shows you the extent to which they are committed to this this right wing ideology. If a Democrat could win in Montana, then they're essentially a Republican. So right. I don't know why that. Well, we do know why that is the response. The other thing is this congressional open seat in Georgia. It was once Newt Gingrich's seat, which people say all the time, like it's like capturing the enemy's flag or something. And $15 million the Democrat John Ossoff has raised to win a seat in Georgia. And again, this is a conservative. He doesn't differ that much from his Republican opponent. And this is something that the party has made a priority, is winning this seat, instead of making it a priority to rebuild in Michigan or to rebuild in Wisconsin or Pennsylvania. No, they're going right to the South, where it's hard for Democrats to win unless they're very conservative, which to me is like, why do we want them? But that's why they want him. They want to make the case for being conservative. They don't want to make the case to the people who have always stuck with Democrats or who want to vote for Democrats, but who have rejected them because of their failures to have their needs addressed.
You know, looking yesterday, for example, in the U.S. Senate, there was a vote 97-2. To one, two nays and one abstention or not voting. This was to impose additional sanctions on Russia for stealing the election, or whatever terminology they use to describe that concept, which is what was being sold in the media. The two nays were both Republicans, Senator Lee from Utah and Senator Paul from Kentucky. The one abstention was Van Holten from Maryland. He's a Democrat. Well, she's a Democrat. So, that was it. All of the rest, bipartisan support on this. In other words, there is no one trying to distinguish themselves from this, you know, maniacal propaganda effort in the United States to apparently enable an attempt at regime change in Russia, which leads nowhere good. And so, you know, far from Democrats just simply trying to appeal to Trump voters on, I guess, the hard right issues. I mean, far from them trying to appeal to them on perhaps the distinction of his policy with Russia, everybody, including the Republicans, are holding to this anti-Russia position. And all of the shenanigans going on in the political sphere, including the ones you describe here, they're sort of outliers to some very basic policy items, you know, that are there's consensus on, and this main one seems to be that Russia's a really bad actor and we're going to do all kinds of bad things to them, and they did indeed steal our election.
Yeah, I found it interesting that they could have reached this conclusion. I thought there was supposed to be a hearing or an investigation or something. And they didn't even complete that. I don't even know where that is right now. They all have stated, they've all gone on record as saying that this is a fact, and making foreign policy decisions. And it's interesting to me how, you know, if those of us on the left, that's always our dream, our fantasy, to have a truly left-wing president. But looking at the way Trump has been hamstrung, the determination to keep him from changing foreign policy orthodoxy makes me question, even if that were possible, what would that person be allowed to do? This is something Trump ran on. It's something Republicans chose him as their nominee. So he should have, and presidents generally have wide latitude when it comes to foreign policy, but that's why they did it. They want to make sure that he can't. And but he is being told that we're not going to allow you to do that. Now, having said that about Trump, I have to say some of his foreign policy is problematic, to say the least, because he seems to think that he can, you know, pull Russia away from China or from Iran, or which is not going to happen. Russia's not going to give up its other allies that easily just to, you know, get rid of sanctions or anything. But at any rate, that is what he said he wanted to do. And it's been made clear by people. The fact that it's, you know, 97 said yes, that, and Republicans are in the majority. So his party, Democrats, they were all on board. as continuing this imperialist policy, and it's very, very dangerous to have a situation where president is being told, no, you can't do what you said you were going to do and what you were elected to do. Now, I guess if it was something I didn't like, maybe I would be happy, but I find it all very, very troubling. We talk about the deep state like it's some, you know, it's intelligence agencies and so forth. But this is very open. This is both parties being in bed together, promoting imperialist schemes.
And not wearing a condom. You wrote that black voters have been slowly neutered over time and are still recovering from the Obama love fest. And so, you know, there are some real measurements of changes among black voters and in the black community generally that are measured, that have been pointed out by some of your colleagues and yourself, at some of your colleagues at Barr, particularly how black voters were generally the most anti-war among Americans, and that there was a shift from where they were to where they are, even if they may still be the most anti-war voters out of all Americans. And that, you know, there are other areas as well, both for black voters and for Democrats and people that self-identify as progressives, where you have seen this rightward shift in at least their attitudes as polled, based on this movement towards the right of the Democratic Party, which of course enables the Republican Party to move further to the right as well.
Yeah, you know, it's we can blame Obama for that. Black people changed their politics because Obama was president and wanted to support him. And talk about throwing things under the bus. Black America threw its politics under the bus choosing to support Obama no matter what. And, you know, it was because of a lot of the racist attacks against him. And, you know, Obama, a lot of his policies were Republican policies. Obamacare was, was championed by right-wing think tanks like the Heritage Foundation. But Republicans wanted a Republican in, and they also were responding. It's obvious racism, a lot of their opposition to Obama. It wasn't based on policy. So black people reflexively supported him and ditched our own politics, our foreign policy, which was always at the very least skeptical of American foreign policy decisions or openly in opposition. Right. We would support people who were declared enemies by the larger society. So if nobody in America liked Fidel Castro, black people did. If no one in America liked Muammar Gaddafi, black people did. But we ditched it all for Obama. And we're still there, and Obama hasn't disappeared. So it'll be hard to recapture that. And he is working hard. It's very interesting. Most former presidents, I mean, George W. Bush, I mean, how many years was it after he left office before you heard anything about him? And it was only because he was promoting this book about with his bad paintings in it. He essentially disappeared after he left office. You didn't hear a peep out of him. He gave speeches and that was about it. Got paid a lot of money for it, of course. Wow. But Obama is endorsing presidential candidates in Europe. He's hanging out with the royal family. He still sees it is his job to help out the ruling elite. And so I think it's going to take a very long time before black people ever get back to where we should be politically. But this rightward shift affects our politics as well. Our politicians, everything changed even before Obama. Once black politicians were targeted with big money, we lost our any claim to have a different set of politics. So we would at least, there was always somebody who would say, Democratic Party's taking us for granted or something like that. You never hear that now. Wow. It's just silence. You have the biggest hacks now. Some of the biggest hacks now are in the Congressional Black Caucus. Some of the loudest voices repeating these anti-Russian tropes are members of the Black Caucus, like Maxine Waters. So unfortunately, I don't see that changing anytime soon. And Trump emerging as the winner for black people the pressure to forget any other political concerns and just support Democrats is even greater.
Yeah, you know, not just black voters. You have, you point out in the article that as the Democratic leadership chases voters in Montana, you know, rather than focusing on the 80,000 votes in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan that would have given Hillary Clinton the Electoral College. But like, for example, Philadelphia, again, talk about black voters not showing up this time. That's almost ground zero for that.
Sure. I mean, as Professor Montero has said eloquently many times on your show, that's he knew that Hillary Clinton was in trouble by seeing what was going on in his hometown of Philadelphia. And so, but that is where the criticism ought to be. You know, if you raise $1 billion, and this is, you know, something I keep harping on, that Hillary Clinton, a $1 billion loss. We're always told that we have to shut up. The Democrats have to raise a lot of money so they can win. And she raised a record amount of money and still lost. And, you know, 80,000 votes shouldn't be, that should not be hard if you have all those resources. But at any rate, so yes, we have people who have been turned off because their lives don't change. I mean, if you talk about Michigan, look at Flint, Michigan. The Democrats did nothing for Flint. This emergency manager business they have in that state, where these mostly black cities lose their sovereignty, lose their voting rights. And the people of Flint switched, their water supply was switched to a poison river. And Obama showed up and did a photo op and kissed babies, and that was it. They didn't do anything for Flint. I mean, that's how you get votes. I'm sure she could have gotten, you know, that margin in Michigan, she could have made up if they'd even gone through the motions of doing anything for Flint. You know, Wisconsin, they let the Republicans take over. They let the Republicans disempower state governmental unions. They lost their collective bargaining rights. And Obama didn't say anything. The rest of the Democrats didn't say anything. So that's how those states like that were lost. But that's not the message they want to promote. They want to be on the right, so they ignore all this evidence of that being more progressive would be the key to victory. They want to be on the right, actually, more than they want to win. I'm pretty convinced of that.
Yeah, you mentioned Flint as an example, and in fact, it's not just that. You know, there was this meager response to the crisis, but. You know, the Flint River became the drinking water supply in 2014. That was this
yes.
actually happened under the Obama EPA, FDA, et cetera, and, you know, in open view, essentially, of the Obama administration. And, you know, rather than saying coming in with the troops like, oops, sorry, we blew this and trying to fix it, you got the response that you just described.
Yeah. And we're told that, you know, the Democrats are, you know, better on the environment than Republicans. And they're not. We, you know, I think we talked about that last week. So there were so many ways that the Obama administration could have attacked this problem, even for cynical political purposes. You know, they should have said, well, we got to save Michigan, but they didn't think they were in danger there. So and it's also something they just didn't care about. I mean, we have to just be blunt about it. They don't care that much. And, you know, they rely on either Republicans being unpopular and losing or Republicans getting in. And then they point to them as the boogeyman. And that's what they rely on to keep Democrats in line and not to actually do the things that would give them strong support amongst their people.
And then, you know, we have you know, the alternative, essentially, that's offered, that's been squashed. To this continued rightward drift of, it's hard to call something a drift when it seems like it's underpowered, you know, like by motor rather than just drifting. But this rightward movement by the party, the continuous rightward movement, the alternative that was posited that people believe to be in another direction, Bernie Sanders, is also completely in the you notice when I read the list of senators before who opposed adding sanctions, he was in the 97 that voted for this. And we have a very interesting article by Glenn Ford at the Barr website, also blackagendareport.com, which pretty much spells it out, why Bernie Sanders is an imperialist pig.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was not a big Bernie Sanders fan for that reason. His foreign policy was pretty conservative and pretty much in keeping with that of the rest of the party. The change he talked about was almost entirely focused on domestic policy. And so, you know, you have to be careful with someone like him. We're told once again to just forget about foreign policy. And, you know, that's the best we can get is someone who talks about campaign finance reform. Although having said that, I think he probably would have beaten Trump where Hillary Clinton lost. But yeah, he's right in keeping with that. And now who knows, with this shooting yesterday and this person allegedly, the shooter who's now dead, allegedly being a Sanders supporter. And right away, it's, you know, what is Sanders going to do? And I mean, it's just ridiculous to me. I don't know how Bernie Sanders can be responsible for some person who's unhinged and, you know, crazy people can latch on to anything. Who knows? So this is going to be another way to discredit progressives and to tell us to shut up. So right now we're being blamed for Trump's victory when it's the party leadership that is entirely to blame. And now with incidents like this, it's going to be used to silence what's left of the progressive wing. And yes, and one of the reasons I voted green, I was at this time last year still registered as a Democrat. I didn't even vote in the primary here in New York because I knew I was not going to vote for either Democrat in November. And I knew I was committed to the Green Party, to a party that was really pro-peace, truly pro-peace. And that meant I couldn't vote for a Democrat anymore, even like Bernie Sanders, maybe a little more left-wing in some other ways.
So, and again, we have a very highly polarized electorate among those that are, you know, inside the third to half of eligible voters still enthralled with the electoral system. I mean, we have an awful lot of people voting with their feet by just not showing up. And a manifestation of that inside the colony of Puerto Rico with the, I think it was 22% turnout on the, referendum.
That's so sad. But
yeah, but that, I mean, that's pretty much the situation. But among those who are engaged solely or primarily in the electoral political sphere, it's highly polarized on the one hand. And you see an example of that between the Clinton Democrats and the Sanders Democrats, and yet on foreign policy again, where they tell you to ignore that. You have almost absolute consensus, almost unanimity, 97-2-1, for example.
Yes, you do. And, you know, Bernie Sanders says the same things about Putin. Putin has to be isolated. Putin is killer. I will not forget his comments about the late Hugo Chavez. He was a dictator, dead communist dictator, I think is what he called him. Yeah. So we would get from a Sanders presidency, we would get business as usual with foreign policy. And that's just not where I am anymore. And I urge, I'm not going to be guilt-whipped into supporting things that I cannot live with, and I urge other people to do the same. I think those of us who are on the left have to remain committed to where we are, and we cannot be dragooned into supporting policies that we can't live with.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the banner Freedom Rider. This week's column, Under the Democrats' Bus. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.